Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to start our plenary wrap-up session. And it's a great pleasure for me to begin with a few comments. Those of you who have endured the last two conferences know that I have in the past taken the liberty to capture a few points which came to my mind as I listened to the presentations, which I thought are important, important synthesis of this meeting, and probably represent some of the areas in which we want to pursue at future conferences. Obviously, I don't proclaim to represent all 310 viewpoints that are in the room, and so the format this afternoon is, after I've given a very small synthesis, is to start off by asking this very distinguished panel at the head table to each come forward and say two or three of the key take-home messages that they have found from this conference. As I said to Jean Labelle from IDRC earlier, and I'll repeat to my other friend, Dino Keaton, since he says it wasn't absolutely clear what I required him to do. It is, as I said to Jean, when you go back to your office, either tomorrow or on Monday, what have you taken away from this conference that will change the way you think and reflect and implement aspects, projects, policies, programs in food security in your job on Monday? So, Dino, I hope that makes sense. And thank you for agreeing all to do this. And then, since I'm only going to give them two or three minutes to say a few words of what has captured their imagination, this is your conference. And so I would like now to, at that point, after they've given their words, to open the floor so that you have a chance to come forward. And it's open debate as an academic institution. We are accustomed to open dialogue and open debate. Obviously, as chairman, I'll use some prerogatives if I see the debate is getting out of hand. But certainly, we want to foster and encourage and stimulate your ideas, your thinking. We want to hear your views. And so feel free to address any of your comments or questions to this panel or to any of the other speakers in the room. But before I go further, let me, first of all, say a very special thank you to each and every one of you in the room, all the participants, for your presence. And again, as we saw from last year's conference, the fact that you've stayed for a second day in such numbers at the very end, I think speaks volumes to you and to your interest on the subject. So I really do commend you for your perseverance. I commend you for your participation and the way in which you have encouraged and stimulated dialogue on the questions that you have brought to the various panels in the past day and a half. Of course, a conference like this could not be accomplished without the hard work of many people behind the scenes. And we'll say a bit more of a formal thank you later on, but certainly Kim Reaney, who many of you have had a chance to see. Kim is the one, and as you can see, she's probably working outside at the moment. She's the one who has put the conference on from start to finish. She enabled it, facilitated it. She facilitated your presence here, and those of the speakers, international speakers, their travel, and also helped with all the arrangements that we have become accustomed to. So certainly Kim and her team, and I also pay tribute to my colleagues in the Faculty of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences, the Development Office, the Dean's Office, all my support staff in the Development Office and in my office who help in numerous ways, and the members of our committee. We have a steering committee, and this conference would not have been possible without the inputs of each and one of the members of the steering committee. You probably don't know them all. They're all in the room, very quietly working away, Caroline Begg, who is up at the front. Caroline has helped significantly with many of the logistical arrangements, the presentations, and getting the volunteers. And this then brings me to our student volunteers, and they have been a remarkable support to the conference as well in many ways in which they have facilitated various aspects. So this is not something that could be done easily. There are many people who come together to make this all possible, and I thank them all, and I will also be thanking them personally, individually, next week when, or tomorrow when we get back to the office. But given that this is the launch of the Global Food Security Institute, and we asked David Nabarro to give the keynote public lecture, and we were also pleased to have Minister Oda with us, I think there were these 5 points that came out from David Nabarro's presentation that struck me, and that is the need to have a better understanding of the links between the 4 food security elements of availability, accessibility, utilization, and stability in different regional settings, national settings, socioeconomic settings. Who are the functional groups that are most at risk of malnutrition and why? So that's a cause for further analysis and a call for further analysis. And to better understand the policy options that are required to achieve an optimal nutrition status, the delivery of these policies in the context of existing partnerships, and what are the institutional mechanisms for improving food and nutritional security in vulnerable populations. So those, I think, were some of the key questions that he threw out that he thought would be areas that needed to be further explored by the McGill Institute of Global Food Security. And then we had a keynote address yesterday by Dr. Eugene Terry, and as he pointed out, there were 5 key take-home messages, and I think both himself and David Nabarro brought out a few points which are worth stressing. David Nabarro went at length with respect to people, and he talked quite a bit about bringing people into the center, people being the focus in terms of development of food and nutritional strategies. And he talked, he said that what he thought would be some of the most exciting areas and opportunities in the future would be the whole area of public-private partnerships. And I think Eugene Terry started off his keynote on that point yesterday, but it was so remarkable that David Nabarro brought it up, Eugene Terry brought it up, and that theme kept resonating throughout the conference. And I thought that was amazing to see that from start to finish. So Eugene stressed the innovative public-private partnerships that need to be brought to the table. This is no longer just the private sector, no longer just the public sector. We need to get the private sector in here. And he stressed the high priorities of science, the need for sound science to inform policy, inform decision-making, increased emphasis on research and development and technology delivery, especially when one considers the underinvestments in science, R&D, and tech transfer over the past 20 to 30 years. In the session yesterday morning, right after the keynote, we had the panel discussed the defining and measurement of food and nutritional security in vulnerable communities, and this was in response to your request last year at last year's conference, where you indicated to us that you wanted 2 themes addressed at this year's conference, and those themes were nutrition security and water security. And we responded to your call by having a panel. And I'm very grateful to my colleagues in the School of Dietetics and Human Nutrition on the McDonald campus who helped in numerous ways to put that session on with nutrition security. And for the first time, I think, bringing into the debate in a very real and meaningful way the inclusion of nutrition security and food security. And that also was one of the key messages that David Nabarro brought out. We heard from one of the speakers about there's already a Declaration of Human Rights, and it includes a right to adequate food. how to bring biodiversity and sustainable diets into food security, the need to have a good nutrition database in order to establish household food security programs, and then this shift between urban and rural populations came out in a few of the presentations, and the need to consider food and nutrition security programs for these two rapidly changing demographical situations. There was a linkage between food security, nutrition, and health, and in Grace Eglin's presentation and the work that she's been doing in the Canadian North, in the Arctic, the effect of climate change on sea ice and the effects of climate change on traditional foods and the effects of diet and health, that Indigenous peoples' knowledge and food systems are disappearing, and how do we try to reconnect on that in order to achieve nutritional security. This big disconnect between food security and healthcare also needs attention. Producing food is alone is not sufficient to alleviate food security. There's a need for a breadth of programs, and we saw this with some of the success stories, for example, in Brazil, brought out by one of the speakers, that you need a package of programs in order to achieve food and nutrition security. You need all the public policies, the socioeconomic reforms, the investments in health, education, and infrastructure. Simply producing food alone is not sufficient. You have to get the package right to see the kind of success of the Brazilian model. We had a report on a Bangladesh study that showed how to get a multidisciplinary stakeholder analysis in order to bring all the stakeholders together to achieve the measurements and then the interventions at the end. And we saw a video that emphasized the nutrition education, business education, and microfinance programs for women all coming together to achieve food security at both the community and the household levels. Then we came to the global water outlook and the international response to that. Bart Schultz emphasized the demographic differences, that the emerging countries represent some of the largest populations and show potential to achieve their food requirements, that there is wealth being generated and created in these emerging countries that is causing a shift and a change in the urban populations. 80% of these populations live in lowlands and flood-prone areas, and therefore development of these tidal lowlands will be important for achieving food security. We saw Mohamed Eid Khadi's presentation where he had his nice triangle or the nexus of water, agriculture, and trade, and the Morocco model being one in which is worth exploring a bit deeper, recognizing that there is not a one-size-fit-all scenario. Every country is different, but certainly the positive benefits that the trade reforms driving water resources development for food security have been achieved in Morocco. That both water, food and nutrition outcomes are mediated through water interventions, and that wealthier diets will require more water, poor water quality affects the availability of safe food, and then the presentation from Claudia Ringler indicating that food prices are likely to increase with climate change in the future. That will have some cause for concern as we develop policies later on. And water management scenarios for securing the food supply, we had two outstanding presentations by two of these the two largest countries in the world in terms of population, emerging countries with very dynamic populations and economies, India and China, where India will have to make significant investments in water infrastructure to meet food demands for their projected population growth. And the same in China, where China has already made and will be making further investments, significant investments in water infrastructure to achieve food security. I think this is very important given that this is the 10th anniversary of the World Commission on Dams report, which was, in my view, a wrong report, a very negative report in terms of food security. It took a very wrong angle. And I think all the research today, and especially a recent report from IMI, have shown that storage is going to be required. We're going to have to invest in infrastructure, and that is the only way that some of these larger countries, and also parts of Africa where the infrastructure has not been developed as yet, to be able to bring water to where the food is grown. So floods and droughts will seriously impact food availability and stability, political stability, and this will require attention to water resources development. China's population growth will also require massive investments, and as we've seen with the South to North Water Transfer Project. We have to continue investments in water savings measures. It's not going to be all storage. We know that agriculture is a high user of water, and so the continued modernization of irrigation technologies, new crop varieties, and mobilization of resources to achieve water savings. Integration of research, technical cooperation, education is important, and a participatory building approach to sustainable environmental management, I think, was one of the key points that was brought home by Dr. Campos in his presentation at the end of yesterday afternoon. This morning, we saw the panel discuss the response of the international development agencies to the food crisis, and I think what is very heartwarming from the presentations from the international agencies is how those agencies and the donors have quickly come to the table to respond to the food crisis with the different programs that have been put in place by the banks, the World Bank, the Regional Development Bank, Regional Development Banks, the World Food Program, EFAD, FAO, and that since the 2007-2008 food crisis, the international development agencies have responded to both the immediate short-term and the longer-term programmatic work for achieving food security in developing countries. The question was brought up earlier in the first presentation this morning from the Canadian Department of Finance as to how to use donor and public funding to leverage private sector investments in agricultural research and development. And there were many key messages in there, the need to stimulate R&D in the agricultural sector. It's not going to be all done by public money, but how do we get the private sector to also be a major player. Particular attention being paid to the 500 million smallholders, farmers that have less than 2 hectares and less, bringing them out of poverty and trying to achieve a more market-oriented smallholder agriculture. And the role of markets and trade to achieve food security was also raised in some of the questions this morning. That, by the way, has come up in our previous two conferences before, but I think it also stresses, like the whole area of public-private partnerships, certainly markets and trade, is a theme that keeps recurring that probably ought to be addressed in future conferences. Bridging the Divide was the last session this morning, where there was a strong link between water availability, water quality, health, disease, and food security. And as Tim Gehry pointed out, centralized water sources such as wells, providing wells, alone drilling wells, without adequate sanitation will not control disease outbreaks and will therefore have an implication as well on food and nutritional security. We saw the excellent presentation as well by Dr. Noel Solomons, where he talked about connecting the dots between water availability, chronic malnutrition, and food security. And as he pointed out, those connections have been somewhat tenuous in the past, but have been strengthened with some of the work, especially done by the Institute of Parasitology and the School of Nutrition on the McDonald campus. Homestead food production can make a difference to the local food production, and it has a direct positive link to household food security as well. There's also quite a bit of discussion about closing the yield gap by application of research and technology. Again, the emphasis on research and technology, and can't afford to neglect that in the future. and using public-private partnerships in agricultural research and development to help to close that yield gap and stimulate further economic development in rural communities. So those were some of the key messages I think that I took away from the different talks and some of the questions that were raised. And at this point, I'm going to turn the floor over for a few very brief words from our distinguished panel. And first of all, Jean Labelle from IDRC. Jean.